I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of the Middle East in the UAE. After a week of continuing NATO nation-armed Israeli genocide, today US President Trump is talking to graduates of West Point Military Academy. That's where soldiers have been trained for American defeat from Vietnam to Nicaragua, from Afghanistan to Iraq, Libya and Yemen. And this in the same week that Trump ordered Kiev dictator Zelensky to talk to Vladimir Putin in Rome, or perhaps face the end of the US subsidy for Genocide Joe's proxy war in Russia through Ukraine. It seems all the might of NATO's weapons and sanctions have failed against Moscow. Perhaps salutary is that the most sanctioned country in Africa, Eritrea, celebrates its Independence Day today, still going despite all the attempts by NATO to destroy it. How and why do sanctions fail, and is Trump living up to his promises of making America great again? Or is he just another president continuing to make China and now BRICS the superpowers of this century? In Dorado, Puerto Rico, is an economist known for correctly predicting the 2008 crash. Peter Schiff is the chief economist and global strategist at Euro-Pacific Asset Management. He's host of the podcast, The Peter Schiff Show, founder of Schiff Sovereign, chairman of Schiff Gold, and best-selling author of The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy, How to Save Yourself and Your Country. Peter, thanks so much for coming on. So it's been another week that on the global stage, especially in the Middle East, we've been worrying about war and the continuing war. But what do you make of Trump at least appearing to want the biggest war in Europe since World War II to end, albeit that he's at the same time pouring Biden-mandated U.S. money into the hands of Zelensky?
Yeah, you know, I think the U.S. involvement with the Ukraine was a mistake. I was opposed to what Biden did from the very beginning. I wanted the U.S. to stay away. I didn't want any aid going to the Ukraine because I knew it would just prolong the war and result in not just the wasting of a lot of money, but more importantly, a lot of lives on both sides, Ukrainians and Russians. I think had we just stayed out of it, I think the two sides would have come to terms very quickly. I think, you know, there would have been some concessions made by the Ukraine, but they wouldn't have given up the entire country. And I think the world would be a much better place today, especially the Ukraine. I think the Ukraine lost the most from the money that was poured into a basically a hopeless war that they could not win. Although I think we enriched a lot of people in the Ukraine in the process, including Zelensky himself, who I understand is quite wealthy now as a result of what he's been able to skim off of all that aid money.
Do we have any proof of that? Is there anything concrete about that? I mean, the scale of the numbers coming from American public money vis-a-vis the war?
Well, we know how much is, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars have been sent there. But I mean, that's just par for the course. I mean, U.S. politicians skim too. I mean, look at, you know, just whatever they found here in Doge, how much money was being made by U.S. bureaucrats when they're able to, you know, put their hand in the public coffers. So I don't have any specific proof, but I would be very surprised if everybody was completely honest with that money. I mean, generally, when there is money going from one government to another government, there is a lot of corruption along the way.
So why do you think, and I know you're saying what many Trump officials have said, and many people all around the Global South have said, why do you think Western European leaders think that it's the best use of the money is to pour it into the hands of Zelensky, and it's somehow a duty to do that, rather than them seeing it the way you do, which is it's helping the mass slaughter of perhaps 1.2 million Ukrainian young men.
And Russians. I mean they're all innocent, too. I mean, the Russians who got, you know, conscripted into the war, I mean, they didn't ask for that either, you know. So, you know, I feel badly for
is there a money connection?
And the people on both sides.
Is there a money connection, quite apart from the Ukrainian corruption?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure U.S. Defense companies had a hand in that because obviously a lot of the money that went to the Ukraine was cycled back into the, you know, military industrial complex here. So there was plenty of money to be made from this war. I mean, that's often why wars are fought, because they're very profitable for certain sectors, you know, that supply the war effort. And I think also that at the time, Biden welcomed the distraction of turning, you know, Russia into this enemy that we can all unify to hate. Seems like Trump is now trying to do the same thing with China, But when you could create some kind of enemy, you can help unify the country, against that enemy, and maybe it distracts their attention from some other problems that you'd rather they not focus on. And it creates a sense of patriotism. Everybody rallies around the flag, and we all rallied around Ukraine. I mean, I remember, you know, I put out a post on Twitter. It was a tweet back then, but it was at the very beginning, and Zelensky showed up at the first ever joint session of Congress remotely, and no one had ever addressed Congress in that manner. And he showed up wearing his T-shirt. And I just, you know, put a post out there. And I said, you know, doesn't the president of the Ukraine own a suit? I said, you know, no one has less respect for Congress than I do. But the couple of times I've addressed Congress, I've worn a suit just out of respect for the institution, not necessarily the men and women who are there, but the institution itself, I want to respect. And I would imagine that Zelensky, when he's asking us for money, would at least show enough respect to have worn a suit. And so I just mentioned that, and I got killed. I got like 100,000 comments of hate. it was the most retweeted post of the day, maybe of the year. And I got written up in dozens of, you know, newspapers, magazines, all like vilifying me for even suggesting that this guy put on a suit, you know, because they're always in the middle of a war. And my point was, well, he's in a studio with professional lighting and makeup. You know, he could have at least thrown on something. He didn't have to wear a short sleeve T-shirt. I mean, somebody could have brought him a jacket. You know, it's like, but they were acting as if the guy was in a foxhole dodging, you know, bullets and hand grenades. And I expected him to put on a suit. I just expected a little respect. But that's how, you know, how much, you know, the Democrats were able to rally Americans around the Ukrainian cause, and they presented Zelensky as if he was George Washington.
How did they? And it was like the American Revolution. You didn't, by the way, Peter, you didn't need to wear a suit for us on Going Underground. But how? And you have 1.1 million followers on X.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I should add, you have 1.1 million followers on X, and as you say, it went widespread. But how do they manufacture that amount of hatred regarding a conflict and a country, presumably, that most Americans couldn't point to on a map?
Well, most Americans can't even point to America on a map. I mean, that's how ridiculous our education system is. But, you know, I was pointing out at the time that this was not like a freedom fight. I pointed out that on the, you know, the list, the Heritage Foundation has an index of economic freedom. And before the war, Ukraine was lower on that list than Russia. So the Ukrainians were less free than the Russians. And of course, Zelensky made them a lot less free after the war because all kinds of civil liberties were suspended as a result of that. So it wasn't about freedom fighters, right? This wasn't like the American Revolution. And so I said, you know, why are we picking a dog in this fight when both sides, you know, have unclean hands? Yeah, I mean, Russia was the aggressor, but I even talked about the things that happened that provoked Putin. It wasn't like Zelensky was like totally innocent without provocation, not to justify the war, but to look at it in its proper context to see, hey, what happened? What led up to it? I even talked about the stuff that we did that led up to it. You know, there were a lot of, you know, people that deserve some of the blame. But I agree with Donald Trump. I think that had Donald Trump been president at the time, I don't think that this would have happened. I do believe that Trump would not have done what Biden did. And maybe there would not have been an invasion had Trump been president. I think it's hard to say if he would have been able to find a diplomatic solution.
Albeit that Trump armed Zelensky and armed Ukraine to the hilt under his first term. Perhaps he didn't know what he was doing when he was doing it, obviously. But I was asking about how they're able to manufacture that kind of, to put it in your vernacular, market sentiment so that you might fear for your life for a tweet. And come to think of it, director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, was on some kind of death list. Certainly there were people who advocated
peace. I got a lot of death. I got a lot of death threats, although now other people are finally saying, why doesn't he put on a suit? You know, now other people feel that they can say it. But when I said it, you know, you couldn't criticize Zelensky. You know, he walked on water. You know, that's what all Americans were putting up, these little Ukrainian flags all over their social media. I mean, you had to just, you know, worship the guy. And, you know, I never looked at him in that light. And I, you know, and my post was simply saying, hey, you know, show a little respect, you know, you know, for when you're basically asking for money, right? Because that's why he was there. But also, you know, I was very critical at the time of the Biden sanctions against Russia. And I said that would come back to bite the U.S. because I knew how critical the dollar's reserve currency status was to propping up the U.S. economy. And I said that Biden just sent a very loud message, a warning to the world that they need to get rid of their dollars, that they could be the next Russia. If they do something that the United States doesn't like, they've got that weapon. And so why would you want to enable the United States with a weapon to use against you? So I said this is going to result in a lot of selling of U.S. dollars and U.S. treasuries. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, the reason that gold is over $3,300 an ounce is because central banks are getting rid of their dollars. And one of the reasons that the yield on U.S. treasuries just hit a new multi-year high and continues to rise is because we don't have all the foreign buyers that Biden scared away. And of course, you know, we're also working to scare them ourselves, you know, with this new big, beautiful bill that the president is behind.
Yeah, I'll get onto that perhaps.
Blows a hole.
I'll get to that bill in part two, perhaps. But then, so Trump is merely hurting the U.S. economy by continuing the Biden sanctions while he pursues peace in Europe. Like, he could just stop the sanctions.
Well,
immediately, presumably. I mean, some might need an act of Congress.
Well, I think that ship has sailed. I mean, I think we've already established the precedent that the dollar is not sacrosanct. And if you're a nation and you have U.S. dollars, you have U.S. treasuries, and you own them in good faith, in that you would trust that they would be a reserve asset, a neutral reserve asset, we've already established the precedent that that's not the case, that we can yank the rug out from under you whenever we want. So I think regardless of what Trump does now, right? If I was, you know, in China or, you know, any of these countries, especially China, because, you know, we vilify China. We say China's our enemy. Okay, well, if China's our enemy, why the hell do they want to leave themselves vulnerable by owning all of our bonds? You know, and it's not just treasuries that they own. They own mortgage-backed securities. They have a tremendous amount of dollar-denominated assets. So I would be completely divesting as quickly as I could.
Peter Schiff, I'll stop you there. More from the chief economist and global strategist at Euro-Pacific Asset Management after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the best-selling author of The Real Crash and the chief economist and global strategist at Euro-Pacific Asset Management, Peter Schiff. Peter, you were talking about why the policies of the Biden administration have damaged the faith in the dollar. I suppose to that, I should ask you why it's been so slow. I mean, some could criticize the BRICS agreements about not acting faster in a time when the United States was trying to sanction so much of the world. Why does it take so long for China to unwind its bond investments? And why does it take so long for other countries to unwind it? And is that because actually the dollar is still pretty useful, even in the short to medium term?
Yeah, I mean, the dollar is still being used to settle a lot of global transactions. So I'm sure the Chinese are using the dollar, but they are gradually weaning themselves off of the dollar. That's why, you know, if you look at their holdings of U.S. treasuries, they've actually gone down a bit over the years.
But not much.
Despite the fact
that
we've issued
Not that much, despite the rhetoric.
Yeah, but, right. But if you look at all the new treasuries that we've issued over the years, the fact that the Chinese haven't bought any of them is a big deal, because they used to be a main buyer of these assets. And so instead of buying more treasuries, they've bought more gold and who knows what else. So if you look at a U.S. dollar debt as a percentage of all the reserves that the Chinese own, the treasuries are a much smaller percentage of their total reserves than they once were, especially if you consider the appreciation of gold, right? So obviously they're buying gold, and the gold that they own is a lot more valuable than it was. But I would guess that the reason that they're not moving more dramatically is because they probably don't want to cause a crash, like the dollar to implode, the treasury market to implode, because they are trying to sell. And so they obviously want to get a decent price. So I think they're happy to slowly bleed it off to try to get a good price. And I think that's one of the reasons, too, that they have really shortened the maturity of their treasury portfolio. So the Chinese are not holding on to a lot of long-term treasuries that they actually have to sell. They have a lot more short-term treasuries that they could just let mature and get their money back, get their dollars. So they don't have to worry about the impact on the treasury market. They just have to worry about the impact on the dollar, right? Because if they try to dump too many dollars at once, the dollar could go down. And especially if a lot of other countries see that and they want to get out. I mean, there could be a run on the dollar. If all the holders decide that they want to get out, they don't want to be the last one holding the dollar, you know, and so it becomes a rush. And we could be in a U.S. dollar crisis relatively soon anyway. I mean, I think the dollar and treasuries are going to keep falling. Even if the Fed cuts rates, I think long-term rates are going to rise because inflation is going to really run out of control, especially as the dollar accelerates its decline. So I think we're heading for a real crisis in the U.S. And I think countries that are smart would be trying to get ahead of that by, you know, selling whatever they can as quietly as they can out of U.S. dollars and any U.S. dollar-denominated debt.
Yeah, you've long forecast that. I mean, you're infamous in the crypto fraternity for being an opponent, of course, of cryptocurrencies, but you're an opponent of sanctions as well. And as well as gold prices going up and other assets, it's clear that when the United States sanctions countries as it does, and it's vassal states in Western Europe, crypto has been a lifeline for so many economies, so many entrepreneurs, businessmen, because actually sanctions can be bypassed pretty easily. Why have you not noted crypto's usefulness and utility when it comes to bypassing U.S. sanctions, now that most of the world trades with the countries that the Biden administration and people like Blinken, forgotten people like Blinken, didn't want people to be doing business with?
Well, because I just don't see the real value of tokens that have no intrinsic value, like Bitcoin or, you know, the thousands.
But I'm not even arguing about intrinsic value. I'm talking about ease of transfer of assets and money for people doing business.
Right. But you could do that. Right, but you could take you could tokenize gold, and you could have a gold-backed crypto that could do all the same things as far as evading the sanctions, but you would have something real. You would have something reliable and dependable. You wouldn't just be gambling on a digital chain letter.
So arguably depends on the exchange that was pegging the peg. It would depend on the peg of the gold price to that crypto coin. Arguably.
Well, it's not pegged. It's actually a custodian of the gold issues a token,
right?
That is redeemable in that gold.
You have to trust that custodian.
I mean, the only thing is
you have to trust that custodian. Whereas with Bitcoin, you don't have to trust any custodian because of the security of the blockchain.
No, you have to trust the mania of the crowd. You just have to trust that the people who decided that Bitcoin has value continue to believe it has value. Right, that's what you're trusting. You're trusting a delusion continuing, but eventually people wake up to reality, and they don't believe in the fantasy anymore. But you just you don't know when that moment is going to come. But the sanctions that I don't like are when the U.S. government tells private citizens what they can invest in. So if I want to invest money in a particular country, that's my right. The U.S. government shouldn't be able to tell me, hey, we don't like what's going on in this country, so you can't make investments in that country. You know, and if you own investments in that country, you've lost them. Because then Americans, you know, citizens who made investments in good faith, all of a sudden the government says, oh, your investments are worthless. You know, you have no, you can't buy and sell these investments anymore. They're gone, you know. And so I don't think that's fair or that's right, that the U.S. government should be able to do that. I mean, we have private property rights and ownership rights, and the government can't abrogate those rights because they say, hey, the property that I own is in a country that they don't like.
Yeah, well, so many countries think that the United States has mandated the stealing of that. So much of what you advise relates to sentiment, market sentiment, to mania. You often talk about tulip mania. I mean, is it one certainty, and it's a very grim one, that expansion of wars helps armed stocks? You alluded to it earlier about who got rich out of the Ukraine war, who may be getting rich out of the current genocide in Gaza. I mean, a 53% rise in Raytheon since 2022, I calculated there, over the corpses of all the poor people there. Isn't that the driving force here? Just as sentiment can be manufactured against people who talk about Zelensky wearing a suit, isn't the only true sentiment here, not gold, not crypto for those who support crypto, but weapon stocks for the increasing amount of war we're seeing?
Yeah. Well, look, it's always hard to know, you know, what's the dog and what's the tail. I mean, clearly, companies are going to profit from war. And there's no, you know, question about that. But the question is, are the wars started to profit those companies, or do those companies profit because the war has started? Because obviously, if there's a war, you're going to need, you know, weapons to fight it. And so we have to, you know, procure those weapons. And so if we don't have companies that can supply us, we're going to lose the war. Assuming the war is just and we need to win it, then, you know, we need the help of the companies that can supply us with what we need to win the war. But the question is a war started specifically to profit those companies? And of course, if that is the case, that's horrible. But, you know, I don't know.
What do you
know.
Think?
But it certainly is very suspicious because, well, they donate a lot of money to these campaigns. But, you know, if you look at the Republicans, Democrats, they both want to spend more money on the military. Nobody wants to cut military spending, which is something that I would really like to see happening, along with a lot of other things that nobody wants to cut. But why is it that nobody will cut defense spending? And that's obviously because everybody is beholden to the defense lobby. Right? Nobody wants to fight that. And so these companies get a lot of money from the government.
Trump isn't beholden.
So they give some of it back to the politicians that keep the gravy train going.
Trump isn't beholden to it, and yet he's still announcing this Golden Dome project. He's a real estate man. He doesn't need to be beholden to it. Why? Just explain why you think someone like Donald Trump would be acting like this.
I don't know why Trump... I don't know why Trump does a lot of stuff. I mean, I know he is beholden. A lot of people gave him money to run for office. I mean, he got a lot of money from crypto. And I think that's why, you know, he feels obligated to pay back the people that helped him get into office. Because he was very anti-Bitcoin before the Bitcoin community started funding his campaign. And then he flipped, right? Because he got bought by their money. And so I think, you know, he feels obligated kind of as a businessman, you know, a man of his word. I mean, he probably, you know, feels, hey, I made some promises to these guys. They gave me a lot of money. They gave me a lot of votes. And so, you know, I got to pay them back. And I also, you know, his family now has positioned themselves to make a lot of money off of the crypto industry.
Yeah, but Miriam Adelson gave him $100 million. He still didn't visit Israel on his Middle East trip. Here, you got. There's no exact correlation. I mean, you would say. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't know. And I was, you know, I was questioning just the other day. You know, this Golden Dome, according to Trump, is going to cost like $175 billion to complete the construction of it. But I know from experience that whatever the government estimates, you got to triple it, and then you're going to be closer to what it's actually going to cost. So we're talking about $500 billion, you know, over the course of the next few years. Where's that money going to come from? I mean, if you look again at the big, beautiful bill, they got like $25 billion in there for that project for the whole, you know, 4 years. So they didn't even come close to pricing in their own estimate which I know from experience is going to be way low because the government always underestimates what everything costs.
Yeah, we've had Chuck Spinney, the whistleblower, who talks about Pentagon fraud, and there's no Pentagon audit by Elon Musk as part of Doge, unfortunately. So you don't think Michael Saylor is the way to go and put all the money into crypto, if any investors out there are watching, as the big, beautiful bill and all these other aspects to Trump policy just increase the debt, just like previous presidents?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's going to be, you know, I guess when history looks back at the Bitcoin craze, the way we currently look back at, you know, tulip mania, to the extent that people even know about it. But I think Michael Saylor is going to be like a big part of it, like maybe even the face of it, because I do expect that MicroStrategy stock is going to go bankrupt as an entity. And I believe a lot of people who bought the convertible notes under the delusion that they were, you know, buying Bitcoin without the risk, that they were participating in the upside, but they had a put on the downside because they could get their money back from Strategy. They're in for a rude awakening because Strategy is not going to have the money to repay the notes because it's just going to have Bitcoin. And when it sells its Bitcoin, it's not going to get nearly enough money to cover its debts. So I think that all the MicroStrategy stockholders will be completely wiped out. And I think the note holders will also lose significantly. They may not lose everything. They'll get something because they're going to be the residual claim on whatever assets MicroStrategy manages to have. I'm not really sure what the software company is worth that's buried beneath the mountain of worthless Bitcoin. But, you know, it's going to be a big part of it. And I think one of the reasons that Bitcoin is, you know, 109,000, wherever it is right now, is because of MicroStrategy and all the Bitcoin they've been able to buy and all the other companies that are now copying the Bitcoin strategy. There's a whole host of companies that are now just buying Bitcoin, and new companies are being formed for the sole purpose of buying Bitcoin, which anybody could buy on their own. I don't need to invest in a company that's business is buying Bitcoin when anybody can just buy Bitcoin. But this is what's happening because it's like a mania. It's worse than the dot-com bubble. There's nothing even beneath it that's real.
Well, we invite Michael Saylor on. Peter Schiff, thank you. That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those suffering the impact of the US-UK EU armed war continuing on Gaza. We'll be back on Monday to investigate why more Americans don't know their complicity in the genocide with the founder of If Americans Knew, Alison Weir. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not sense in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.